welcome to this special SearchSecurity.com podcast. I'm Eric Parizeau. It's great to have you with us. In this featured podcast from our Identity and Access Management Security School, we're going to count down the top five different types of consumer web authentication technologies on the market today. Joining me today is Mark Diodati, Identity and Privacy Strategies Analyst with Midvale, Utah-based research firm Burton Group. Thanks for spending some time with us today, Mark.
Oh, my pleasure, Eric. It's a pleasure speaking with you again.
All right. Well, before we get to the countdown, Mark, can you briefly set the stage for us by explaining why there's such an increased focus on consumer web authentication as of late? Basically, it boils down to compliance, right?
Well, there's no doubt that the Federal Financial Institutions Examination Council, the FFIEC, issued some guidance in 2005 stating that single-factor authentication, that is, passwords, is insufficient for access to financial transactions or private confidential information. So that mandated, it's called guidance, but it's really mandating some additional consumer authentication techniques be implemented by the end of 2006. So surely that was a catalyst, and as we'll talk about in the countdown, the primary authentication technique that got implemented was risk analytics. But what we're seeing in 2007 is that the financial institutions and other organizations as well realize that's not enough, and they're continuing to implement additional controls over time. So it was definitely a compliance thing. I think the compliance thing, too, is driven by the fact that just the staggering amount of identity thefts and fraud transactions really drove that compliance. So I think it's a good set of regulations.
All right, Mark. As you know, we're going to count down now from number 5 to number 1. So let's get started. Web authentication technology number 5, behavioral biometrics. Now, Mark,
sure.
how do you define behavioral biometrics? That's not any kind of webcam that keeps an eye on what you're doing, is it?
No. It differs from, but your point is well taken, because the behavioral biometrics differs from classic biometrics that we consider, where you're measuring something about the user, retina, iris, fingerprint, that required specialized readers. With behavioral biometrics, specifically typing, we're talking about measuring the speed and dwell of your typing. So the speed is the time between keys, and the dwell is how long you hold down keys. So with that kind of metric, you can measure and get a biometric fingerprint about the user. It requires a Flash plugin to the browser, which is nearly ubiquitous, but we can't really say that it's truly clientless. And I need to say that as we count down these five techniques, there's no single bulletproof technique. Every mainstream authentication mechanism is subject to attack. It could be harvesting, impersonation, man-in-the-middle, or malware. And behavioral biometrics typing here is not an exception here. And so it is subject to attacks like keystroke capturers, but they have to be very specialized keystroke capturers that can measure this kind of speed and dwell.
Sure. Now, Mark, a lot of our listeners might wonder about the error rate of these products and just how accurate they are. Is that a concern?
Well, I think as security practitioners, we're used to things like, is the password correct or not? Is the one-time password being given to me correct or not? Is the digital signature from that private key correct or not? And when we enter the world of biometrics, we now have to start thinking about tuning things. And so with all biometric systems, you have false accept rates. In other words, it's not the legitimate user, but we're going to accept who they are. And we have false reject rates. It is the right person, but we're not going to accept their biometric. And that's with all biometric systems, you need to tune the system to get that best balance of false accepts, false rejects rates. And also because all these authentication techniques we talk about aren't bulletproof by themselves, you would layer different technologies with typing biometrics or anything else. For example, you might couple risk analytic engines with typing biometrics to help mitigate the risk of false accept rates.
All right. Next on our list of the top five consumer web authentication technologies, number 4, mobile PKI. Tell us about that one, Mark.
Sure. And it's interesting because when you talk about PKI, to some people, maybe enterprise-focused people, PKI sort of has a bad name. But it does permeate all of our identity systems, all of our SOA. The web relies upon it. And the mobile PKI market has had a resurgence because of consumer authentication. And it's exemplified by folks like TriCypher, Arcot, and Entrust. And what makes it mobile is that there's a limited footprint or zero footprint. And there are some enhanced techniques to protect the private key. With TriCypher, they split the key. With Arcot, they use some camouflaging technology that makes brute force attacks not really feasible on the private key on the workstation. Why is this good stuff? Well, we talked about man in the middle being a kind of an attack that can occur here. When you get PKI involved, it significantly mitigates the risk of man in the middle. So the other thing that mobile PKI can provide is it can provide transactional authentication capabilities as well. So not just the initial authentication, but each transaction if you so choose to implement it. So we're seeing some very large financial institutions sign up for these kinds of technologies and begin to deploy them.
Moving on to number 3 in our countdown of the top 5 consumer web authentication methods, one-time password devices. Now, Mark, this is an intriguing technology, but one that's been around for a little while.
Oh, you bet. And it is the default stronger authentication mechanism in the enterprise. And the reason why it's been so successful is that it's portable. So the classic example and implementation of this is a key fob, something users carry on their keychain. It's very small, and it displays a password every minute or so, and the user takes that and concatenates it with a PIN that they know. So they take the PIN, the private thing, like an ATM PIN, and this one-time password, and they implement it. So we've seen some deployments of this within consumer authentication, not within retail consumer authentication, broad deployments, but for high-value institutional investing, also corporate cash management applications. One of the things we've seen recently, and we all knew that in theory these things were possible, was we've seen some very high press around man-in-the-middle attacks on one-time password devices. That doesn't mean that they're not very valuable and they provide stronger authentication. It just means you need to couple them with other technologies to mitigate against man-in-the-middle. An interesting trend here, too, is what I would characterize as Frankensteining OTPs with bank cards. So we all take a bank card and we use it when we go online. I pull my bank card out. It's my account. That's what I enter into my web form. And so this technology actually takes the one-time password device, the small liquid crystal screen that are on those, and it embeds it inside a bank card. And so it does provide some additional convenience.
Now, Mark, I'm curious as to whether the marriage of one-time passwords and bank cards is something that you think will take off over the long term. Could that be a standard practice in a few years?
I think the answer to that depends on two specific factors. One is reliability. These devices are largely unproven in terms of reliability, whereas within the enterprise, the traditional one-time password device was pretty bulletproof. You could, you know, fire a bullet at it or drive a truck over them, and it would still work. With this kind of device, it's a credit card with some electronics embedded on it. So durability and reliability still haven't been proven yet. The other factor is cost, and so we're seeing. We know of several large financial institutions that have purchased initial batches of these kinds of cards, and we know that if that continues over time, the price will drop. And so if the price continues to drop and reliability is proven, I think it's a good marriage of technologies and would serve consumers well.
Sure, like most things, it boils down to dollars and cents.
You bet.
We're getting close to the conclusion of our countdown. Item number 2 on our list of the top 5 consumer web authentication technologies: risk analytic engines. That's one a number of organizations may already be familiar with, Mark.
True. In the flurry to meet the FFIC guidance, most financial institutions implemented risk analytic engines because it didn't impact their front end, the front door. It didn't impact the authentication process for users. And while it is a consumer authentication technique, it's not an authentication technique in the classical sense. What's happening here is that these risk analytic engines monitor transactions passively now, today. In the future, they might run actively. I'll talk about that in a second. But they just sit there and they monitor transactions. So if I'm an internet banker and I pay my bills, you know, from 5 to 7 Eastern time, Monday through Friday, that if I try to do a $2 million ACH or funds transfer from North Korea, it's going to catch it, and then the bank's anti-fraud department will follow up on it. Risk analytic engines, I think, are good. Just like in the credit card industry where we see risk analytics being applied, it's a way to mitigate risk associated with all consumer authentication techniques. So we consider it, no matter what authentication technique you use for as a primary authentication to users, we consider risk analytics a core component to protect end users and identify fraud. Over time, these passive risk analytic engines, instead of letting the transaction go through and catching it in the back office, will be migrated to active, where they may actually attempt to further authenticate the user on a risky transaction or outright stop the transaction. But that's in the future.
for the purposes of enterprises, passive versus active, what are the key things that enterprises really need to know?
Well, the interesting thing with these consumer authentication technologies is that they're built around usability and the fundamental problem that you can't make consumers do something, right? If they don't like the consumer authentication technique you apply, they can go to another bank, and that's certainly not the paradigm within the enterprise with employees. But these kinds of things like risk analytics, other things like device identification, behavioral biometrics, typing, those kinds of things are creeping their way into the enterprise because they are so useful and can augment the traditional security policies of the enterprise.
All right. Well, here we are, the number one item on our list of the top five consumer web authentication technologies, and it's out-of-band identity proofing. Give us the scoop on that one, Mark.
Sure, and it's a mouthful, isn't it? Out-of-band identity proofing. But when we talk about identity proofing, what we're talking about is how we, the financial institution and the consumer-facing organization, authenticate the user before we give them their credentials or their authenticators, before we unlock their accounts. It's associated with how we vet users before we give them credentials or unlock their existing set of credentials. It's not about the user using their credentials. It's about the steps we take to ensure that the user at the other end of that transaction is who they say they are before we give them an authenticator and such. And so the core problem with doing that is, think self-service mode where users unlock their account. What do we typically do? We ask them a set of knowledge-based authentication life questions. And those questions can be easily guessed by somebody who's not that user. And so organizations, they may say, well, we'll ask many questions, and then we'll pick a subset of them, and then we'll ask them of the person. That impacts usability severely because users can't remember all the answers to those questions. And so what out-of-band identity proofing does is it takes that whole process of vetting the user outside the channel of the web where it's subject to man-in-the-middle attack and malware and all of those other things. And it contacts the user typically at a phone number of record. So the bank may know who the user is and has a phone number. So if the account gets unlocked or if it's a challenge to a risky transaction, the bank, and this is through an automated mechanism, will call the user at a phone number of record. The user gets to pick that one. And they'll give the user a vouch code over the phone. The user types that into the web form. And it's a way of identity proofing the user that happens completely outside the web transaction. So you get better usability. And you get better security.
All right. So then, to recap our list of the top five consumer web authentication technologies, number five, behavioral biometrics, number four, mobile PKI, number three, one-time password devices, number two, risk analytic engines, and number one, out-of-band identity proofing. Mark Diodati, identity and privacy strategies analyst with Midvale, Utah-based research firm Burton Group. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Eric.
For more materials in our Identity and Access Management Security School, visit searchsecurity.com/IAMschool. And we have many more information security podcasts on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Eric Parizeau. Stay safe out there.